Moncrief on News Talk.
New York's mayor, Zohan Mamdani, has come up with a novel scheme to tackle high grocery prices in the city, along with the issues of so-called food deserts. He wants to establish 5 city-owned grocery stores, one in each borough, which will sell family essentials at up to 30% cheaper than commercial retail. Excuse me. Should we do something similar here? As you can imagine, not all commentators are keen on this plan. Among them, the economist David W. Higgins. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
I think when everyone's struggling to pay the bills, this is you could see how this would be an extremely popular idea.
For sure. And I'll have to begin by understanding that people are hurting with high grocery prices. In Ireland's case, since 2020, we've seen a 27% rise in the prices that people have seen at the supermarket. Now, wages have risen in line with that, but it has risen faster on the food side. Now, the problem with what Mamdani is proposing is that I don't think it's going to produce any savings in the round, simply because he is using taxpayer money to produce a 30% saving in those particular stores. So the idea is that the state runs them, keeps a discount on basic goods, all other goods are sold at the market price. And then there's a saving for people there. But, you know, people are also taxpayers. And the subsidy that he's going to have to put in, I think it's about $70 million he's going to do there. That's adding to a big deficit that New York City already has. So if he wants to make this an across the city saving, a city of 8 million people, he's going to need to find billions to do it. The same is true if we wanted to do the same here in Ireland. And I don't think you're actually going to, in the round, provide any sort of savings for people because it's just going to come from higher tax.
Yeah, I think in his specific, I mean, he has named, I think, all the places it's going to be located. But one of these outlets is going to be in a place called Hunts Point, which is apparently a food desert. The rates of poverty there are quite high. So people would have to travel, or at the moment have to travel, to some sort of retail outlet to buy food anyway. So that's tackling, it's more that problem. And plus also, you know, if people are struggling to buy the basics, it helps in that regard as well. It doesn't sound like he's going to take on the multiples or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I'd wonder in a city of 8 million people how something like that has come about and if the distance really is that far, subway and bus. I mean, I lived in New York for 3 months when I was back as a student. I actually worked in a grocery store, would you believe, as a cashier. So this is something I felt in my own experience, when I see a policy like this come along. Even if that is, you know, one of the 5 that you might say is a food desert, it's very clear that what he is going after here in his messaging is the idea that there is large profiteering taken by supermarkets. And while there are some other sectors, you might look at energy, you know, health, private insurance in the US, for example, there are bigger profits that get made in these other essential areas. Food is not a large margin business. If you look at some of the Irish numbers, because the CCPC, the Competition Consumer Protection Commission, they looked at this a couple of years ago, the margin in Irish retailers is somewhere between 1% and 4%. They listed the names, Tesco at around 3.5, Lidl around 2, and then Aldi below 1.5%, almost close to 1. So the money being made here in the round is not especially high. And what he is trying to do is effectively, I think, find a solution for a problem that mostly isn't there.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he'd be doing it if there wasn't a problem there. And even in Ireland, the stats seem to bear out that about 1 in 3 people now are saying that they're having problems paying the bill. Tesco's profits last year were 185 million. So I don't think they're struggling to get by.
You need to remember that we spend on food about 13 billion, right? So 13 billion, if you make profits on 13 billion, even 1 or 2%, that's going to show up in tens or even hundreds of millions. It doesn't imply that a business has actually begun to kind of take in a very, very large way. And remember that we have close to perfect competition when it comes to groceries. I challenge anyone listening to check their phones. I bet a lot of your listeners have some of the apps out there. Maybe it's a Lidl Plus, maybe a Real Rewards, people getting their vouchers across multiple grocery outlets, trying to see which ones that they can get the best deal in. People tend to switch quite regularly between supermarket. The loyalty that other businesses have for customers just isn't there. People move when even minor things like 10, 20 cents goes on butter, on milk, on the essentials. People, because of that movement, are very much a defense against big profiteering by retailers. And that's why the data doesn't show that there's big profits there in the round.
But Mamdani's measure seems to be aimed at the poorest people. People who probably don't have a car to go and do the big shop. There's a certain amount, and you know, there's a cohort of people in Ireland as well who are struggling to pay the bills.
Yeah, so I looked at this afternoon. Eurostat tries to measure this. They ask people in surveys, have you struggled to put meat, for example, on the table? You know, not just any old set of calories, but a dish with meat every day or every second day. And about 1.7%, so just under 2% in Ireland, mark that they struggle to do that. You go for the rest of Europe, it's about 8%. But you know, it's not zero. So there are people out there who struggle. You know, my message there is that, well, we have so many other policies. We have basic social welfare rates for some families, particularly lone parent or single parent families. It can be child benefit is the scheme that actually helps lift people up away from food poverty. It is a real issue. But I think that the mechanism we use to address these things should be through those other means, not by interfering in markets that work relatively well. We've healthy competition, I think, in grocery retailers. And I wouldn't go the route he's going down to try and change that.
Yeah. The journal did do a poll, and the 57.5% were in favour of the idea. Now, that's 5,543 votes the last time I looked. With the plain people of Ireland, it seems to be a popular idea. Let me read you out one text. Val says, I'm from the Bronx. I've read about serious health problems in Hunts Point, which is traditionally the site of wholesale food distribution, and the lack of access at Hunt Point's residents after fruit and veg. This is one of the poorest places in the country, and I hope Mamdani's policies will help, which again seems to bear out he's targeting it a particular places rather than, you know, he's going to interfere with the mechanisms of the market.
For sure. Look, and I accept that he, in his, you know, instance, has some bit of a tilt towards that. I mean, part of the reason I've written this column this week is that we've had a call from the people for profit to go further in Ireland's case. And what they're calling for is a much wider set of caps on prices and a bid to much more aggressively intervene in the Irish market. And I think I would challenge most people across, you know, urban and rural Ireland to see, do they have at least one or more available stores to them for basic goods? And I think most people in Ireland will say that they do have that availability. And because of the move of discount German retailers into Ireland, that's kind of over 10 years ago now it happened. But that depressed food prices hugely. From 2008 to 2010, we saw a 17% fall in the price of food in supermarkets, partly because of those groups coming in. And I think that's a proof that free markets can act much more aggressively towards getting food prices down than any government intervention can do.
Mm. Doesn't that hurt somebody, though, at some point down the line of production? If the supermarkets say, we're not going to, you know, say to the wholesalers, we're not going to pay any more than this, the wholesalers are maybe passing that on to the producers, and you know, somebody somewhere is getting into debt or living in close to the poverty line who's producing this food.
That's a very fair point. And an example I cite in the piece here is, well, we've all walked into supermarkets to see a 50 cent bag of carrots, and ask any farmer what it takes to produce that, and they'll tell you it's a euro, even two, or even more. So the fact that a big slashing happens here as a loss leader that the supermarkets use, that does present it's a whole separate debate we could have. Is there a fair price being given to producers down the line? But I think what it does tell us is that the consumer is actually getting a really good deal vis-a-vis what things used to be before the grocery order. This is a bill we used to have back in the 2000s. People remember in the 90s, no supermarket was allowed to do that kind of cut price activity. Everyone had to pay something at the cost to produce it. So maybe that's a worthwhile debate having. But, you know, it certainly means we'd actually go in the other direction. Instead of having discounts below cost on basic groceries, we'd be saying to people, well, sorry, you're going to have to pay what the price to produce it is.
Mm-hmm. David, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was David W. Higgins there at the Independent Economist. Jonathan largely agrees with what David is saying. He says the subsidised grocery shops are a disaster. We've seen it before. I understand the instinct. Food costs have risen sharply and helping families with basic beats a lot of other things taxpayer money gets wasted on. But this specific idea has a predictable flaw. Picture Paddy's independent shop next door. Slim 5% margins after taxes, VAT collection, heavy regulation and all the risk. Government opens a subsidised not-for-profit discount store beside it, selling essentials 30% cheaper, funded by taxation. Paddy can't match the prices. He closes. His family goes on social welfare. They now spend that support in the state shop. Demand soars. Government declares success and rolls out more stores. Private shops shrink. The tax base erodes. Dependency grows and taxpayers pay twice. Aldi, Lidl, etc. already compete hard on price through efficiency. The better route is to cut taxes generally, so there is more disposable income, and cut regulatory burdens on food retail so real competition can help drive prices further down. This approach creates more of the problem it claims to solve, says Jonathan. Well, now, and a lot of people have made the same criticism of Mam Danny's plan, and they keep pointing out that they're not putting it next door to one of the big multiples. They're putting it in areas where there are no multiples and people don't have the opportunity to go to a big supermarket and avail of that competition that's happening. So it seems to be quite a limited thing. Now, there are areas in Ireland one can identify where people are food poor, where there are food deserts, or people having the wherewithal to travel long distances to go to a Lidl or an Aldi. So maybe there's an argument on a limited basis on that basis. Pat says the problem with poverty which that economist doesn't mention are the unexpected bills people get all the time. School bills, medical appliances breaking, boilers breaking. Also, the social welfare can be cut without warning and they have to reapply. Another texter says, if you think food prices are high now, wait for the shortages to kick in due to the droughts and the fuel crisis. God help us all. And David did mention loyalty cards and all that. Another texter says, in order to avail of the loyalty or club card price, you need to give information and personal details. What do the supermarkets do with this information? Supermarkets make a fortune, as do off-licences. They have all doubled in size since COVID, as they were the only places open. Salaries and wages haven't inflated the same way the cost of living has. Indeed, not. Well, I think we already know that in the digital age. We're not giving away any information that somebody somewhere isn't making money out of.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.